Do you enjoy this podcast but wish you had more weekly short doses of insights and nuggets? Well, if you didn't know, I recently launched an email newsletter where you can join and connect with a community of like-minded young women around the world, also on the journey of personal growth. This weekly email includes everything from mindful insights and finds, tips on living well, relationships, my personal experiences, and a lot more. Subscribe to get your weekly email newsletter. The link is directly in this podcast episode show notes, or you can head directly to my website at emilyelizabeth.blog and you can sign up from there.
Emily Elizabeth, and I'm the host of the What Fulfills You podcast, a show for and about individuals always seeking to be their best selves. On this show, we talk all about building the mindset, finding the right careers, creating meaningful relationships, and so much more. Welcome to the What Fulfills You podcast.
Hello, hello, friends. Welcome back to another episode of What Fulfills You. My name is Emily Elizabeth. I'm your host. And as always, welcome if this is your first time tuning into the show. For today's episode, I have on Renee Fitton. She is a longevity dietitian and the director of education at El Nutra, the company behind Prolon's fasting mimicking diet. Renee specializes in applying advanced nutritional research to help people achieve longer, healthier lives, especially through approaches that benefit cellular health without requiring drastic lifestyle changes. You guys, this episode was full of information, a lot of information that you may want to take notes on. But without further ado, let's welcome Renee to the podcast. Well, Renee, thank you so much for joining me. I'm so glad we're able to record here in the studio and kind of make this work. But let's just dive into it. As I told you, I was listening to some of your conversations with others on the way here. And something that I've always been fascinated about since I was in college is fasting. And I hear a mix of things around that, especially for women and how it can be different for men and women and how it impacts hormones. So can you kind of paint a picture of what fasting is so we can like start there, especially for women who've never tried it before? I certainly tried it, intermittent fasting specifically when I was in college and maybe more trying to lose weight, things of that nature. But I think as I've listened to podcasts and have learned and done my own side research, I've learned that there's just different nuances about it.
Absolutely. And I'm so glad that you started with that question, because I think a lot of people hear fasting and they're like, well, it's obviously that you just don't eat food. But how long do you have to not eat food for it to be considered fasting? And what can you have anything? Can you have water? Can you not have water?
Yeah.
Can you have certain foods? And then it starts to suddenly we recognize it is more complicated than just are you eating food or are you not eating food? So the basic dictionary definition of fasting is that you are not consuming food, and it could be for any amount of time. Okay. But as a registered dietitian and as a healthcare practitioner, we have a little bit more complex definitions, and we start kind of putting different types of fasting into different boxes. So there's intermittent fasting or shorter term fasting, and that can be fasts generally when we really start considering some sort of clinical benefit is around the 12-hour mark.
Okay.
So 12-hour mark usually, and then that can go all the way up to about 48 hours. That's still in the world of intermittent fasting or like shorter term fasts. And then we look into prolonged fasting, and these are fasts that are over 2 days, and there's actually they're separated because there's different benefits to those. And then we can break it down even more, and we can look into what type of fast. Is it a dry fast, no water at all? Is it a water fast, or is it a fasting mimicking program where you can actually eat food and get the benefits of water-only fasting but with food? And so that's, I mean, not to give away too much, but one of my favorite ways to support the benefits of fasting, especially in women.
Okay. What are the typical, stereotypical benefits of fasting? Like, why are people even generally curious or doing this on, whether it's occasional, whether it's every other day, weekly, quarterly? Why are people even doing it?
So many reasons. Yeah. And I think that's why so many people are talking about it, because there's so many applications mm-hmm. to fasting. But the big ones are going to be weight loss, metabolic health. So we're talking things like your blood pressure, your cholesterol, mm-hmm. your blood sugar, your insulin levels, things like that.
Yeah.
And then longevity is now really something that people are starting to talk about with fasting. So I'd say that those are probably the top three. But the beauty of fasting is that you are letting your body do the work. So mm-hmm. unlike a medication where it's super hyper targeted to one specific thing that it's trying to accomplish, mm-hmm. when we fast, what we're doing is we're kind of getting out of our body's way
yeah.
to go repair itself.
Yeah.
And so you can imagine that our body is incredibly intelligent. It's had a lot of time to figure out what it needs to do when it needs to do work.
Mm-hmm.
And so it is able to target so many different aspects. So if you look at a list of everything that fasting can support, it is incredibly long.
Wow. I actually never knew until our conversation and preparing for it that longevity had correlation to fasting.
Yeah.
Where does that come from? Like on the science and like the deep roots, like where does that, how does that occur?
Yeah. So it's a really good question. So first of all, we have to decide what is our definition of longevity and how do we measure longevity, sure. right? Yeah. So there's so many different ways that people are measuring longevity, and what many people are now kind of measuring is something called biological age.
Yeah.
And so your biological age is different than your chronological age or the number on your passport or birth mm-hmm. certificate. It is the number that is measured based off of your cellular age. So kind of yeah. the age that your body behaves.
Mm-hmm.
And so there's also a lot of different ways to measure biological age, yeah. but a lot of things that people are looking at are different biomarkers. There's my favorite tests are the ones that take a number of things mm-hmm. and essentially put it into an equation or an algorithm to say, okay, you're here, 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 and let's see what that spits out for your biological age. Yeah. And some people are younger than their true age,
mm-hmm.
and some people are unfortunately older than their true age.
Right.
So just recently, a study came out actually just in 2024 in Nature, one of the top journals, using fasting mimicking diets for 5 days, once a month for 3 months in a row. So that's a total of 15 days over a 3 month period.
Okay.
And they were able to show 2.5 years of biological age reversed.
Just in 90 days or?
Over a period of 90 days, and yeah. only 15 of those days did people actually do a fast.
Okay. Wow.
Yeah. So this is like in the world of biological age.
Yeah.
Really unheard of.
Okay.
To get that kind of results.
Yeah.
Turning back the clock.
Yeah. This is me saying things assumptively, like out loud, thinking for the listener.
Yeah.
So if we're eating normally on like why does that maybe progress us, you know, you kind of yes. know what I'm saying? Like, why is that progressing us? And why is this fasting, like, why is it that it actually, like, what is it doing to our body that makes us actually reverse the clock?
Yeah. So I think the important thing to know is that when our body gets food,
mm-hmm.
it has essentially radars in our body that is going to say food is here.
Yeah.
And when those are turned on, then the body says, okay, food's here, let's grow. And that's really good, especially if you are from the ages of 0 to 18,
mm-hmm.
you're pregnant, you're breastfeeding, because our body needs to grow and build, right?
Mm-hmm.
But when we're not in those phases of life, then growth is really just us growing to age, right?
Mm.
And so we're just continuously adding, adding, adding.
Right.
And this also means that, like, at a cellular level, we're just like stuffing ourselves with more stuff.
Uh-huh.
Right. I kind of like to think of it like a home with walls, right? That, you know, like you only have so much space.
Mm-hmm.
You make money, you start buying stuff, and you love this stuff that you're mm-hmm. buying, and you buy more stuff and you buy more stuff until all of a sudden, like, there's no more space for stuff.
Right.
And you can't even walk around your house. And unfortunately, with excess consumption, even at a cellular level, mm-hmm. we end up just accumulating waste. Mm. And unless we take a second to do like a really good spring cleaning and get rid of the stuff that's not really serving us so much, yeah. it's setting us up for failure. And mm-hmm. so that is what's happening at the cellular level.
Okay.
Not to mention that, you know, like especially if you're eating unhealthfully, you're also impacting your healthy blood glucose levels. You're impacting your insulin resistance. There's a mm-hmm. bunch of, you know, more metabolic things
yeah.
that you're impacting. But I think what makes fasting different than just a healthy diet is the ability to tackle things at the cellular level. Mm-hmm. And we might get here. I hope we do. But that's really happening because of a process called autophagy mm-hmm. that is really only triggered by specific types of fasts.
Okay. Could you actually explain that? I'd also heard you talk about that on other podcasts. Could you kind of break that down for someone that's like, this is really new to them and yeah. they are into just improving their health and wellness, but all of these science specific words are a little confusing.
Yes. Yeah. Autophagy. I mean, like they really should just call it cellular cleanup or uh-huh. cellular rejuvenation. I think it's more clear, but of course they have to get fancy and they have to get yeah. scientific. So they call it autophagy. And what that word means is it means self-eating. And okay. so in at the cellular level, your body is actually going in and it's eating the pieces that are no longer working, are misfolded, are broken, are just like essentially junk that's being kind of floating around.
Yeah.
So autophagy is really, really important in terms of being like an internal doctor for your cells or mm-hmm. like a vacuum cleaner for your cells. But it really only turns on when we fast for over about 3 days. At around that 3 day mark, that's when it's really turning on.
Okay.
And so most people, as you can imagine, are very seldomly tapping into autophagy. We're just kind of letting the junk accumulate. And our body, like, of course, is going to have a little bit of cleanup, tidy up here and there, but it's never going for a full spring cleaning.
Okay.
And so that's why these fasts are so important. The only other thing that we know that is really able to activate autophagy at that level is really significant exercise. And I'm talking quite significant, like over an hour, really intensive exercise. So your body needs to get a stressor to turn that on.
Okay. What are the benefits of that? Why should people be curious to tap into that? And then what is a frequency that would be too much and maybe a frequency that is not as effective? So let's say someone did that only once a year versus mm-hmm. maybe once a quarter. What are some differences in that?
For sure. So honestly, I'm a big believer in anything is better than nothing.
Okay.
So yeah. if you can do it once a year, yeah. amazing. Yeah. Great. The goal is that we tap into this about 3 to 4 times a year. So uh-huh. once a quarter is perfect. Mm-hmm. Everybody's a little bit different. I've like now since scaled back, I used to do once a quarter. And now like I can tell it's perfect at 3 times a year.
Okay.
And some years I'll even just do it twice a year. Okay. Especially if you're already generally healthy and you don't have you know, your lab work is really good and you're just doing it for optimization and maintenance mm-hmm. and longevity, mm-hmm. then 3 times a year is kind of that golden number, right? Mm-hmm. Now, we do recommend for some people that have maybe type 2 diabetes or who have metabolic concerns, their labs maybe don't look as good. They might do 4, 5, 6 cycles in a row even. So mm-hmm. I'm saying that monthly, right? So once a month versus anywhere from 4 to 6 months in a row.
Yeah.
So that they can reverse their conditions in many mm-hmm. cases. And then they'll go to what we would consider that maintenance or healthy every 3 to 4 months.
Okay. Are you familiar with the differences of fasting for women and men? Like, so I asked because I had a functional dietitian on my podcast late last year, and on it, she talked about the misconceptions of intermittent fasting for women and how, you know, she went into a lot of different topics of PCOS and infertility and things like that. And she kind of, you know, simplified it and talked about how there are, you know, potential dangers for women who are, you know, wanting to be healthy in their fertility stage for intermittent fasting. Can you kind of touch on that and maybe for anyone that has concerns around that?
Yeah, I think that's super important. So first things first is that fasting is a stressor on the body.
Yeah.
And that is really important to know, especially for women that are already really thin. Mm. So anybody who has a BMI under 18.5, agreed. Do not fast. You don't need to. And it can just be just too much of a stress on your body.
Okay.
So it kind of goes back to that concept of like, do you need to grow? Are you in a period of growth or are you not? Right. Yeah. So if you are in a period of growth under 18, if you need to really build muscle, if that's a big focus for you, maybe not the right fit right now.
I see.
Right.
Okay.
But if you are already like really strong, really healthy, it's still a good opportunity too fast as long as you're not too thin.
Yeah.
For women, also intermittent fasting every single day is a stressor on your body every single day. Mm. That is why I am actually not a big proponent of everyday intermittent fasting.
Yeah.
Honestly, for pretty much anybody at very long periods of time. So like 16-hour fasts, probably unnecessary for most people that are generally healthy. Yeah. Most people, like I'm not even just saying women.
Yeah.
But I think especially for women, it can be problematic because what we see is that our body just responds to these stress hormones mm-hmm. that are released when we fast, when we exercise, when we, you know, any of even positive stressors mm-hmm. are causing our body some stress. And so we have to be gentle. So that's why I love these longer fasts, mm-hmm. right?
Yeah.
That you just do 3 times a year.
Okay.
So that you let your body kind of be in a very healthy, natural kind of circadian rhythm, meaning you're doing about 12 hours of fasting mm-hmm. a day, mm-hmm. which is pretty normal, right? Mm-hmm. It lets your body stay out of a hyper-stressed state, but you still get all of the benefits of the cleanup a few times a year.
Okay.
So,
and that's generally safe for women who are in, you know, their 20s and 30s, also, you know, perhaps trying to conceive in the future and whatnot and looking at fertility and
Okay. So let me make a quick note about that. In terms of fertility, there's actually not a lot of research there. So we have to be really careful about what we say.
Mm-hmm.
Now, we work with a lot of fertility physicians, mm-hmm. OBGYNs, mm-hmm. that love using fasting mimicking specifically, again, because you're adding food, which reduces the amount of stress, right? Yeah. And you're only doing it infrequently. You're not doing these really long fasts every single day.
Yeah.
And they're using it to get their patients to a healthy metabolic state. Because one problem for fertility, you know, there's so many reasons why fertility can be difficult for us. But one of the biggest ones is going to be an unhealthy metabolic state. And unfortunately, over 90% of Americans are metabolically unhealthy.
Okay.
This is a huge number, right? And so you could look super thin, you could look super healthy and be metabolically unhealthy.
Mm-hmm.
And so fasting, one of the first things that I said when we were chatting was fasting is really good for metabolic health.
Yeah.
And so if you are metabolically unhealthy, then fasting could be a really great way to get you to a healthy metabolic place where you can then look into conception. So a lot of the OBGYNs that we work with, and I am not an OBGYN, so I'll just like make that very clear right away. I'm registered dietitian, so I have to be careful how much I say. So I'm just going to lean on what I have heard from them time and time again, which is that they don't recommend fasting within 3 months of your desired conception date.
Okay.
Because that's a time where you'd really just want to let your body focus on that, right?
I see.
But before that, when you're prepping your body to be its healthiest, strongest state for fertility, like you can really support your metabolic health. You can support your cellular health. Mm-hmm. You can support your biological age going in reverse. These are all things that can set you up really well for a healthy body, which is what you need for a healthy fertility.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
So, yeah, I think like there's a lot of misconceptions around fasting because people are just assuming it's every day, 16 hour plus.
Okay.
Like some people are doing one meal a day fasting.
Yeah.
It's really aggressive fasting protocols right. with no food.
Right.
And of course, that's going to be a stress to the body.
Yeah. Yeah. Because, and as you say that, it reminds me of, you know, I feel like she was kind of insinuating, especially daily intermittent fasting, and especially if you're skipping meals and your blood sugar, like all of that. And so that makes sense, like when you're talking about, okay, especially if you're doing it that consistently without food. Can you talk about the fast mimicking diet and what's the difference? Because I know, as you mentioned, it does incorporate food, right? And so it's not just like a blanket, like you're not eating for X amount of hours or X amount of days.
Yeah, absolutely. So the fasting mimicking diet is incredible. Mm-hmm. It was honestly founded based off of now 25 years of science, mm-hmm. looking into how you can get the benefits of water-only fasting, but with food. And I'm not talking like a bone broth here and there, okay. or a tea, you know, which I think is what people usually assume. I'm talking, you're having crackers, you're having snacks, you're having soups, you're having breakfast bars that are made with nuts and, you know, whole plant-based food. Uh-huh. So you're getting real solid food all day for 5 days, right? You can do it. You can, there's 1 day programs too, but mm-hmm. you know, we really want to get that benefit at that 3 day mark. So the 5 day program is the way to get all of the longevity benefits, all of the cellular benefits, all the good stuff. So yeah, so it's really straightforward. You pretty much just eat very specific foods that aren't going to kick you out of a fast for those 5 days. And your body is essentially tricked into thinking that it is in a fast.
Okay.
But you get to eat.
Can you explain that? Like how does, so also maybe elaborate on kind of like the science behind certain foods or drinks or whatever that actually break you out of a fast and why these types of foods specifically don't.
For sure. So let me back up a little bit and just say that our cells have a different definition of fasting than our dictionary definition of fasting.
Right.
And so what they're looking for, the way I like to think about it, is that on the cell's surface, there's essentially like alarm bells or there's like radars, like 007 style, you know, trying to live under those. And they're looking for very specific things. And it turns out that not every nutrient and in not every amount will actually trigger those alarm bells.
Okay.
So you can have specific things that won't trigger them. The major ones that will trigger the alarm bells are going to be protein and simple sugars.
Okay.
And so those are the those are kind of like the big categories. But then within the categories, there's also a lot of specifics. Like we're talking specific amino acids that are especially going to, you know, sound the alarm bells and specific amounts, right? Okay. So like you can kind of – it's all a little unique. So it's very particular, but that's why and that's also why it took, you know, the 25 years, $50 million plus dollars in R&D. There's now like hundreds of patents here. It's very, very carefully and scientifically designed. You can't – it's really tough to do it on your own, which is why I'm a big fan of like the kits that give you everything that you need.
Yeah.
But hypothetically, you know, if you hypothetically could if you wanted to.
Yeah. Could you elaborate a little bit more on the kits? Like what? So this is also to like clarify, this is through Prolon, right?
Yeah. So there's two companies now that are doing it.
Yeah.
There's Prolon and there's L Nutra Health.
Okay.
And the difference between the two is that Prolon is more like if you're generally healthy, you're just looking to support healthy aging, you maybe want to lose like 5 pounds, you know, something pretty, you know, mostly just for prevention.
Okay.
That's going to be Prolon.
Okay.
And you get the kit and you're kind of off to the races. There's like some group coaching and things like that that you can do.
Okay.
That's going to be Prolon. The L Nutra Health world is more medical. So you have pre-diabetes, type 2 diabetes. Mm-hmm. Your doctor told you that you have to get your blood pressure in check, stuff like that. You'd want to do the L Nutra Health world because there's doctors that will help support you. There's one-on-one dietitian visits that will support you. You get lab work done. So it's a little bit more involved and a little bit more support to make sure that you're doing this safely.
Yeah. You talked about earlier how you actually started doing a lot of this since like when you were 25.
Yeah.
And by the way, I think you look great and fabulous. And I am such like I probably in the past 2 years, I started paying attention more of, you know, how I look and feel and how others, especially those that like clearly look like way younger than they actually are, so to speak, I'm always like, wow, like how are they taking care of themselves? Like, what are they eating? Like, even the past year, like I've gone into, you know, the food specifics a lot more than I was prior, even as a former athlete. Like last year, as you know, as just a 20-some-year-old in New York, I'm just more intrigued now, like the all the foods and everything, right? And so can you share a little bit of your personal story as to how you got into it, why you were interested, you know, for someone who, because when I was, just out of college, I think I was interested in health, but I wasn't maybe thinking about this anti-aging aspect or the biological age until I started hearing about it, really. And I think that made an impact on me in paying attention to just how I take care of myself, because I do believe a foundation of this podcast, which is that to have and create a fulfilling life, you also have to be healthy. You have to build on your relationships. You have to build on how you take care of yourself physically and mentally. Yeah. So I'm kind of curious of your journey and how that could, you know, maybe relate to some of the listeners.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, my journey, man, if you go way back to when I was in college, mm-hmm. I was so sure I wanted to be a doctor.
Okay.
It's like, this is right for me. I was volunteering in ER rooms. Okay. I did Doctors Without Borders, the Canadian version.
Yeah.
And so I went to Nicaragua and South Africa, and mm-hmm. I was doing like everything right, you know, to become a doctor. And then I started realizing just through my experiences that like when I got sent to Nicaragua, I was only able to bring like a bag this big of my own clothes.
Yeah.
Which for me was like, okay, we're going to do it because it's, you know, it's the right thing to do. But then what they did was they gave me a huge, huge bag that was my bag of medications.
Okay.
And that's what we were bringing to these people that realistically wouldn't be able to get more of that medication once we left.
Okay.
And for some cases, that was the right thing to do. Absolutely. Because, you know, they had like a bacterial infection and all you need is one course of antibiotics and cool. But in other cases, they had some lifestyle focused diseases or lifestyle focused issues that all they needed was maybe a change in what they were eating or change in the way that they were living.
Yeah.
And I was like, man, I feel like we're kind of missing the point here.
Yeah.
And so I got back home, and I had really gotten myself into more, you know, exercise, wellness, and just that kind of merging of those two things.
Yeah.
I started digging into it. And once you crack open the book of nutrition, it's really hard to close it because there's so much to know.
Yeah.
There's so much controversy.
Mm-hmm.
So like also just as a problem solver, I wanted to know like, okay, well, who's right here?
Yeah.
and unfortunately, in a lot of cases, we just don't know in reality. It's really just about going and figuring out where there's the most strong evidence.
Mm.
And that was just a lot of fun for me. So that was like kind of the beginning of that story. And it was a decade-long process of figuring out kind of where I finally wanted to net out, getting my master's degree in longevity nutrition, and working under Dr. Walter Longo, who's one of the leading longevity researchers in the world today.
Yeah.
And, he really opened my eyes to the world of fasting and fasting mimicking and its impact on longevity. And, you know, from there it was kind of game over.
Yeah. When did you start to notice these lifestyle changes in the way you eat, especially, and of course, exercise and whatnot? When did you start to see that affect you physically?
Honestly, right away. Okay.
Did anyone ever make comments and be like, wow, you look like different or anything, like anything around that? Funny enough, because my mom said that to me recently and she was like, did you get Botox? I'm like, no. I'm like, no, I'm too scared of needles. But I'm like, okay, I think my health is doing well.
No, well, it's some of these little things. Like even just the other day, someone was like, man, your hair looks like so nice. And I was like, I didn't do anything. And then I'm, oh no, I totally did. I've been drinking more water lately. And it's those little things. But even like, for example, every time I finish a 5-day fasting mimicking, I go in already generally healthy and feeling pretty good, just kind of going in, just going to do this because I know it's good for my longevity.
Right.
And then I'll come out of it and I'll be like, oh my God, those little bumps on the back of my arm are gone, you know? Or even just like on day six, I can smell things better. I can taste things better. I feel like I'm just clearer headed. So it's a lot of little things that just make you realize how impactful nutrition can be in so many different areas.
Yeah.
Beyond weight loss, which is, I think, usually when people think about nutrition, and without fail, when I tell people I'm a dietitian, the first thing is like, oh, so how can I lose weight? You know? And like, hey, I'm, by the way, big supporter of, you know, getting yourself in a place that makes you confident, makes you happy. Yeah. And if weight loss is part of that journey, let's get there. Like, let's work on that. But it is just one very small piece of the big nutrition puzzle that kind of we live in.
Can you share your personal diet or like how you eat, like morning, lunch, evening? This is something that I have always, especially in the past year, I've gotten more curious. And I do actually, before I forget, want to talk about animal protein versus plant-based protein, because I did hear you talk about that as well. But I think that's something, as you had shared before, which is that protein has become a big topic amongst women in the recent year or so, of course. And while I always knew the importance of protein, I didn't quite know it to the extent until I actually had that functional dietitian on my podcast.
Yeah.
She gave, you know, very specific numbers, like roughly like, you know, 30 grams per meal, things of that nature. And when I heard you talk about, you know, animal versus plant-based, that also got me thinking as well of like, oh, like, you know, maybe too much animal protein could also be, you know, as you would put it, like growing and, you know, versus and kind of contribute to aging, of course, right? Like as you naturally would. But all of those things, can we start with like how you eat?
Yes.
I think that's even some of my bestest friends, like the New York lifestyle. And even when I lived in LA too, it's just kind of like very easy to get too carefree, you know, you go out to drinks and dinner. And then, you know, if you're not doing this on the daily, you just don't know where to start, right? Until you hear an example and you see someone visually, you're like, oh, they look great. What are they doing? And I'm the type of person that's like, you got to embed it into your lifestyle. There is no quick fix. You know, everyone's always asking like, oh, how do you maintain this? I'm like, trust me, it's been years, like even since college. And but you, it's like a lifestyle thing. And I have learned simply just from hearing from people like you, like say, oh, this is some of the types of foods I'm eating in the morning, some of the types of foods I'm eating for lunch, like this is how much water I'm doing.
Yeah. Oh my gosh, there's so much. I have so much to say here.
Yeah.
Even just like going to the concept of living in New York. I spend a lot of time in New York, one of my favorite cities in the world. And the food is incredible. And there's a lot of going out for dinner.
Yes.
And so just, and I know like we're in LA right now. It's very similar here in a lot of ways. Although, you know, I think a little less so, but still like we love a good meal.
Yeah.
And so I'm a big believer in enjoying that.
Yes.
So that is super important. And in the world of longevity, community, and eating with friends is actually really, really helpful. So putting yourself in a place where you have to hole up in your home and make every single meal is, as much as people like to think that that's going to be my answer, it's not.
Yeah.
It's absolutely not. So that's just like my little caveat on the side.
Yeah.
Ways that you can enjoy your life and enjoy your meals and get to indulge here and there is by finding meals where you can have like a really well-balanced and healthy meal. Like a lot of people find that breakfast and lunch, they're those meals that they have a little bit more control over. So just creating a space where you know what you're going to have. So if having you know, your breakfast food already ready to go in your fridge or at your office, or knowing like the places nearby that you can go pick something up that is generally like a well-balanced meal. Amazing. I'm a big believer in plant-based nutrition. So does that mean that you can't have any meat ever? No. But does it mean that you're going to prioritize plant-based sources of protein and primarily plant-based nutrition in as many meals as you can? Yeah, for sure. That's also really good before you go out for dinner, make sure that you're not going starving, which a lot of the time I think we think that we have to because like, oh, I'm going to go and enjoy this incredible meal. Let me restrict myself before I go.
Yeah.
But if you do that, you're going to show up to that dinner and the food's going to be incredible and you're just going to eat everything on the table, understandably, right? Yeah. Like that's actually how our bodies are programmed to behave because the amount of food that we have in front of our plate right now, that's not what our bodies evolved with. Like for the past, you know, several millions of years, that's not how it's been. So our body, when we see food, if we're hungry, we're going to eat it. So showing up, not starving to a dinner is going to set you up so that you can enjoy the meal, but not overindulge.
Right.
Those are just kind of like these little things. Mm-hmm. And then what you'll find is like your portion control will improve. I'm going to sound like a broken record, but fasting mimicking and doing it even just three times a year has consistently shown there's been some surveys done with people who have done 5 days of a fasting mimicking. That's just one, right?
Okay.
Over 85% of people are more motivated to adopt other healthy lifestyle changes. They have less sugar cravings in I think it's over 65% of cases. We see that they have a better relationship with food. Mm. And it's because when you sit back and you take time to think about your relationship with food, which we never take the time to do, you kind of start to realize that some of your cues to eat were not hunger cues to eat. Mm. And it's really hard to pick that apart. Like, I think that's something that, like, you'll hear a lot of times, like, oh, just like, would you rather eat an apple or would you rather eat that chocolate bar? And if you don't want the apple, then you're not hungry. And like, I guess there's some truth to that, sure. But there's so many things that make us want to eat as human beings. Yeah. There's all these emotional things. It's really hard to unpack that, especially with all of the time that we spend learning like why we want to eat and why food makes us happy.
Yeah.
And it's way more than just hunger or not hunger.
Okay.
And so if you can reconnect with your body and relearn your hunger signals and just get more in touch with your own cues, you will find without a doubt that your portion control will improve and you'll just naturally, you know, kind of go towards healthier food. I've seen it time and time again after these fasting mimicking diets that it's just this kind of instinctual desire to go for a healthier item. Hard to say why that is.
Okay.
But I have some suspicions that I could guess, but I think it's mostly just like this ability to connect internally and listen to your body for 5 days.
Right.
And also a sense of pride once you've finished 5 days of something, that's not super easy, by the way. Like, even if you're getting food, it's still hard, you know?
Yeah.
And once you're done, you just feel so accomplished. And it kind of sets you up like, if I can do this, I can do anything.
Right.
You know?
Right. So. I think you kind of mentioned it. Are you plant-based or?
I would say I'm loosely plant-based.
Okay.
So if somebody throws a piece of steak on the table and says, Renee, this is the best Wagyu meat that we flew in from, Japan, and you have to try it. It's the best I've ever had.
Yeah.
Absolutely, I'm having a piece of that.
Okay.
Sorry. It's just like, you just told me it was the best thing you've ever had.
Yeah.
So I will. Absolutely. Yeah. But I would say if I was picking something off the shelf for me and I'm going based off of my own instinct, I'm always going to pick the plant-based one first.
Okay. So I guess two questions. Why is that? And also for those who are curious about being more plant-based, can you share examples of how you do breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Actually, even for myself too, because I'm curious, like right now, for example, I eat, typically like 3 eggs in the morning, maybe 4, and then, maybe a side of sourdough toast with avocado, things of that nature. And when I think of, okay, for myself, I'm curious about maybe incorporating that into my weekly routine, but I don't even know where to start. I think the first thing I'd be like, oh, let me go on Pinterest and search some recipes, right? So like, can you share some
Absolutely, of yours? For sure. I mean, even just like off what you shared, avocado toast, first of all, plant-based already, right? But if we're taking out the eggs,
yeah,
what can you replace? Because we still want to get our protein.
Yeah. Yeah.
So there's a couple things that I would do. If you really love your scrambled XYZ eggs, mm-hmm. this is going to sound crazy to some people, but scrambled tofu is incredible, especially if you throw in like some veggies and some good seasoning. It's yeah. really good. So you can do that, and it's super high protein.
Sounds delicious.
It is actually delicious.
So it's just like kind of like scrambled eggs, but instead scrambled tofu.
Exactly.
Okay, got it.
And you can just like, you can literally get them into little crumbles okay. as it is. And I'll even put that on toast and turn it into like toast with the scramble on top
okay.
and veggies. And that's fully plant-based. It's incredible. With your avocado toast, if you mm-hmm. want to add protein to that, plant-based protein.
Yeah.
Again, people don't do this enough. Hummus or just mashed chickpeas
okay.
is legumes and beans are packed full of plant-based protein okay. And also tons of fiber. So you're getting a lot of really great nutrient-dense protein.
Yeah.
So you can just mush the chickpeas or just use hummus and then put the avocado on top.
Yeah.
And that is so good. I've been so impressed.
Wow.
Yeah. Okay. I've been so impressed. So, I mean, and another one that is kind of my go-to just because I'm always on the go. I'm always late for everything, yeah, honestly, because I'm just like trying to jam pack so many things. Yeah. I'll just throw stuff in a blender and run okay. and I'll take it with me.
Okay.
So I love to put like kale or spinach, and I actually freeze my kale or and spinach
okay.
because it helps just one, it makes it really easy to stuff it all in, but also it adds some cool kind of like icy kind of texture to it.
Totally.
I also put in frozen banana.
Okay.
And then I put in a scoop of protein powder, or again, sometimes when I'm not feeling protein powder, because protein powder oftentimes doesn't taste great or it has a very specific flavor. I have my favorites and they're chocolate and berry flavor. And uh-huh. sometimes I just want plain flavor.
Right.
And I do tofu. So you can just like
okay.
do like a completely plain tofu, cut it in like half or even a quarter and throw that in, and it makes it super silky and you don't taste it. Tofu doesn't really taste like anything.
Okay.
So that will add some flavor.
Is that like
to
breakfast,
it.
Lunch, snack?
You
like,
can do that anytime, but okay. I usually start that with the first thing of the day.
Okay.
And you know, you have it so jam packed with fruits, veggies, a little bit of protein, well, quite a bit of protein.
Mm-hmm.
You've got pretty much everything that you need because yeah. the fruits, by the way, are adding carbohydrates.
Right.
The tofu or protein powder is adding protein, and then you've got the vegetables for all of the, like the leafy greens, fiber, et cetera, all the extra good stuff.
Okay.
You can put in avocado for healthy fats. That'll help you stay fuller longer to your next meal, which I'm a big fan of too. Flax seeds are great
okay.
in there too. I mean, so much fun ways to turn a smoothie into like whatever you want it to be, but
wow.
just try and make sure that you're getting in like one of each of the food groups
yeah.
so that you have a full meal. Because if you skip out on the fiber, if you skip out on the protein, you will be hungry very shortly after. And
right.
it's kind of like not really,
okay,
not setting you up for success.
Can you dive into the difference between animal protein and plant protein? I think that one is definitely my own personal curiosity as well. And let's say whether it's someone that wants to switch to one or the other, or maybe do a mix of both, why is that so important, especially relating to longevity and aging?
Okay. So this is going to be a controversial topic okay. because
love that.
Welcome to the world of protein and the world right. of nutrition. Honestly.
Right.
That's just unfortunately the way of the nutrition land is that there's just going to always be people that go either which way, because you can the way that you run a study
mm-hmm.
can affect the outcomes. And so right. what's really important is to look at lots of studies that are done in the most rigorous ways. One thing that we love is randomized controlled trials. And another thing that we love is epidemiological studies. And you want both because these are really, really big trials that look at things over a long period of time, and really focused trials that try and take out any sort of bias or things that might impact it.
Okay.
Anyway. All when we look at the collection of evidence, it is very strongly pointing to plant-based protein being the best to support longevity.
Mm.
Now, why is that? So animal-based proteins are made up of different amino acids, which are the building blocks of protein, mm-hmm. than plant-based proteins.
Yeah.
The animal-based proteins are going to really signal for that growth. And we kind of talked about it a little bit earlier.
Yeah.
But when we see, what we see with plant-based proteins is that they're really, really, really pushing for that growth. There's two, not to get too nerdy here, yeah. but there's two pathways that are really turned on by protein, and it's IGF-1 and mTOR.
Okay.
They are pathways that are long been associated with healthy aging. If you limit their activation, you see better longevity. And if you really trigger them a lot, you see reduction in longevity.
Okay.
You kind of want to live actually kind of in the middle. You don't also want to never trigger them, because then you'll be a frail, you know, very weak person, and that's also unhealthy, okay. right? So what we want is to try and find this really healthy balance of not triggering them too much, but still supporting them so that we can support ourselves with healthy protein, support our muscles, support some growth without kind of pulling the throttle to 100, which is right. what animal proteins do with the amino acids that they have. They're just throttling it to the fastest you can go, and it's too much. It forces okay. your body to kind of go a million miles a minute in building and growing, mm-hmm. and that, if done for too long, too often, is also kind of the definition of cancer. And that's why we see people with really high elevations in IGF-1, they have higher risk of cancer as well.
Mm. I've heard this. I actually recently heard this again on a podcast as yeah. well. I heard someone say this and brought it up to my partner. I was like, oh, look at this red meat.
Well, red meat has been, unfortunately, that one, it has a lot of research there, uh-huh. especially, and, you know, for all my red meat lovers out yeah. there, I'll say, if you're going to cut out any red meat, just at least cut out the processed red meat. That one is, without a doubt, consistently been shown to increase rates of cancer.
Okay. What's an example? What do you mean?
Hot dogs, sliced meat. So pretty much all okay. of the sliced meats at the deli.
Yeah.
Even bacon.
Okay.
Yeah. But like, if you see, you'll see a lot now where they say like nitrate free and mm-hmm. things like that. Mm-hmm. Those ones, they're saying that because of all of the findings that were showing that some of those things that they were adding into those processed meats uh-huh. were problematic. But if you see that it's specifically saying that it's nitrite or nitrate free, it's probably because they're saying like, look, we know that we're bad.
Oh my God. But okay. I haven't had a hot dog in bad. Years. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Okay. So I couldn't even imagine what processed meat was. That's why I had to ask, because I think for me, as a red meat lover, I do, if I eat meat, then I typically eat like ground beef.
Yeah.
And what else? Like just, I will actually buy like a steak from either the farmer's market yeah. or, you know, like Eataly, where I love to buy like my produce and all that from in New York. And of course my Italian pasta, but, okay, cool. That's good to know. And so the plant-based aspect, is it better for someone to try to do a mix of both, or?
So Dr. Walter Longo, who uh-huh. I mentioned, wrote a book called The Longevity Diet, where okay. he outlines the longevity diet, how best to eat for healthy aging. And he actually recommends that people have 2 servings of fish a week.
Okay.
And so, all, you know, the gold standard would be very limited to no animal protein, with the exception of maybe 1 or 2 pieces of fish a week to help get some of those omega-3s.
Right.
But, you know, again, if meat is a really big part of your lifestyle and what you absolutely love, do the best that you can to mm-hmm. be plant-based. The thing is that what we often see is that when people are super focused on the getting in their animal protein every day,
yeah.
it usually shoves out a lot of other really good things like vegetables and fibrous foods that mm-hmm. you still want to get. And so when you can at least replace, I would be happy if you just started with 1 serving a week, honestly.
Yeah.
I would start somewhere, right? Like, how about once a week you do plant-based Fridays or plant-based Mondays
yeah.
or, you know, whatever it is.
Yeah.
And then you'll start to recognize, oh, wow, that was like incredibly filling and that was really good. And you'll start to find the things that you like too.
Yeah.
And you might start noticing some other changes to your body, which are inevitably going to come because plant-based foods are just so much more nutrient dense.
Yeah.
And you get so much more for them,
mm-hmm.
for your bang for your buck, as they say.
Yeah.
So I think do what you can, try and make a couple replacements, but you know, as working with a patient, I would never tell them you have to go fully plant-based today if they weren't fully plant-based. I don't even do that myself.
Right.
So it's about working towards that and finding opportunities and recognizing that not every meal has to have a piece of animal protein, which I think is where a lot of people are starting to go.
Yeah. Well, this is actually things like going on in my head right now as you're talking about this. And I'm sure listeners who are actively into their health and how they eat are maybe thinking about it as well. Because I'm honestly imagining like, okay, like I'm going to try this tofu thing.
Yeah. I can't wait for you to text me and let me know how it goes because I'll send you some recipes. Maybe we can post them for the.
I think that'd be great. Yeah.
But you will be so surprised.
Yeah.
At how flavorful and tasty it is. I mean, just the other day, I sound like a tofu advocate, but I like barbecued avocado.
Yeah.
And tofu, like on a little stovetop grill.
Yeah.
And it was so flavorful. And people always think, well, I grew up in Alberta, Canada, which is also known as like the beef country.
Right.
And my dad made steak every single night for me. And so the idea of putting avocado and tofu on the grill would have been like awful to him.
Right.
But here we are today and I tried it and I can say for certainty that it is incredible.
Okay. Side note, what about snacks or what are you snacking on the go? This is like definitely a personal question when it comes to just like knowing how, you know, I'm always on the go and I'm often just like hungry as well. And I think right now, I think as I'm thinking about not doing too much animal protein mm-hmm. on an everyday basis and trying to like do a balance of both, I'm kind of curious, like what's your go-tos on how you know stay full in between?
Yeah. So I have a lot to say here too. So I would say one, the concept of snacking, I just want to say for anybody who feels like they have to snack,
mm-hmm.
you don't.
Yeah.
So snack only if you're like, man, I really want to go for dinner at 7 p.m.
Mm-hmm.
and it's 4 p.m. and I'm starving right now. Yes, please have a snack, right? But I think a lot of the time we've been told that we have to have 3 full meals and 2 snacks every single day.
Mm-hmm.
You don't have to do that. It actually, for some people, can put you in a place where you're constantly hungry and it can also prevent your body from going into natural kind of ebbs and flows of blood sugar, which is good for your body.
Okay.
So like even short periods of fasting
can
be good for your body.
Okay.
And really are good for your body. It lets your body be what we call metabolically flexible.
Mm-hmm.
So that's just my little side note on snacking.
Yeah.
But yes, I do like there's also a lot of times where on the go, you're running around, you're not going to be able to have lunch for a little while. Like you have to eat something. What are you going to have? I love me some trail mix.
Okay.
I also am a big fan. There's these things called fasting bars by Prolon, the same company that I was just mentioning earlier, that have no – so a lot of people use them to prolonged fasting
mm-hmm.
so that you can eat that and your body still believes that you're in a fasted state, the same science as the fasting mimicking. But I actually like them just as a regular middle of the day snack because what they've been shown to do is not change your blood sugar and not change your ketones. So it's like a really stable snack that still helps you get full, still gives you really amazing nutrition from plant-based sources.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, really, it's doing exactly what you need it to do when you're thinking about a snack. So that's one. I also love coconut yogurt.
Okay.
Not super portable like the other ones, but a really great snack with I have this really incredible coconut granola that's made primarily with seeds and nuts. It's not that I'm opposed to oats in any way, but I just really like this one.
Yeah.
I think it's great. And then I'll put fresh berries on it. And so then you get some of the protein from the yogurt, you get some of the fruit, and then you get a little bit of those carbohydrates. It's sweet, it's delicious. Amazing.
Wow. Okay. Yeah. This is so informative. I feel like these are like the types of things like someone has to take notes on for like ideas. Yeah. Like this is what I literally did when I was, you know, just honestly, even 2 years ago, like when I was starting to pay attention and someone said this on a podcast, I would actually pull out my notes app and I'd be like, okay, this is like what I can get at Whole Foods next time. Like I can, you know what I mean? These are just like the small snippets that we take. So that's why I appreciate you sharing just like insights in how you do it, you know?
Absolutely. And honestly, like, if anybody ever is wondering what to do, there's so many resources out there. Yes, Pinterest, you called it. Like there really is a lot of ideas out there. Find a person that has the same taste as you. There's going to be a lot of them. And just follow them and just get inspo from there. I started my career in nutrition honestly kind of as just cooking for people.
Okay.
Because I love to cook and I thought it was really fun. I needed to create content for social media. So I was constantly looking for the next thing that I could make that was different than what I had made a couple of days prior.
Yeah.
And I never ran out. I never ran out of plant-based food for my social media that I needed to fill the content for. You don't need that much variety in our regular day to day. You still should have some.
Yeah.
Of course.
Yeah.
But yeah, just find the stuff that you love.
Yeah.
And then it's out there.
Final two questions.
Yeah.
If you could leave the listeners with any just go-tos right now that they could do in support of their longevity and their health, let's say name three. What are those three?
Oh my gosh, there's so much. There's so much. I would say in terms of longevity, I want to remind people that there are a lot of ways to support longevity and nutrition is one of many.
Yeah.
So if you made it through all of this way and it wasn't quite resonating with you, thank you. But also know that there's other things that you can do, like supporting your sleep. Making really strong relationships, exercise, all of these other metrics play into longevity too. Yeah. And so if you're not ready to make nutrition your priority today, go find one of those other aspects that you are ready to make a change in and do that.
Yes.
And what you will find is that once you've made one change there, you'll feel really empowered and you'll make another change somewhere else.
Yeah. Yeah, I experienced that myself. So thank you for sharing that, because that's what Fulfills You is about, which is a fulfilling life is the intersection of all aspects, you know, our career, how we take care of ourselves and our relationships for sure.
Yeah.
But final question for you, and it's something I ask every guest, but in reflecting on everything and, you know, health, what you've studied, your experiences, what would you say fulfills you in life?
You know, that it's honestly a really tough question, because I think a lot does. I have a practice in the morning where I will wake up and the first thing that I do is I think of three new things that I didn't say in the days prior that I'm grateful for. And so I have learned very quickly that there are a lot of things that I'm grateful for and that fulfill me and that bring me joy. But things that I go back to very frequently are the people that surround me, absolutely. Yeah. But also accomplishment. So, and that can be something very, very little, but it can be, I'm a big fan of escape rooms, which is super nerdy, but true. Even just like accomplishing one of those, like, or any sort of puzzle or something, getting that accomplished at work, like knocking one thing off of my to-do list.
Yeah.
That is so weirdly fulfilling. But between those two things, one being, of course, the people that you're surrounded with that just bring you so much joy, and to the accomplishment in even the smallest things and just ticking things off, those things very much fulfill me.
I love that. I'm very similar as well. Definitely relationships and who I'm surrounded by, but also just like for myself, being able to see myself progress. And I think that's definitely through accomplishments.
Exactly. Exactly. I mean, I could not agree more. And I can tell that we're similar in a lot of ways. Yeah, and exactly. I'm sure that a lot of listeners are too.
Yeah.
But even people who aren't, like I have a lot of friends that are a little bit more introverted. Mm-hmm. And even if you are introverted, even just having that one person that you can call from a really long distance away, it's amazing what people can do.
Oh, yes, definitely. Wow. Well, thank you, Renee, for being on the podcast today. Where can everyone find you, your work, Prolon, Share, whatever? And I don't know if there's a code or anything, or by chance they would be open to giving a code for listeners if they would want to try the kit or any of the products, but please share.
Absolutely. We'll make sure to get a discount code for everybody. It'll be a link and you can put it hopefully in the show notes.
Exactly.
So we'll do that. If you want to learn more about Prolon, you can go to prolonlife.com. If you want to learn more about me, you can find me on social media at Fitton Nutrition. That's Fitton Nutrition. Mm-hmm. And I think that, and then I did mention L Nutra Health. So worth mentioning that you can find L Nutra Health at L-NutraHealth.com.
Okay. Amazing. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much for having me.
And that was all for today's episode with Renee Fitton. I hope you all enjoyed this conversation and had a lot of takeaways. If you did, please be sure to let us know. Post this episode on your Insta story and tag the podcast Instagram at What Fulfills You and myself at Emily E. Duong. And of course, if you are curious to try Prolon and the fasting mimicking diet, you can check it out with our link, prolonlife.com/whatfulfillsyou. Again, that is in the show notes. And if you use that link, you can get 15% off automatically. And to learn more about Prolon and L Nutra in general, all of their socials will be linked in the show notes. Thanks again for tuning in. I would chat with you all in the next one.